Welcome back, everybody. It's me, Ruby, with this week's episode of the Now Age podcast. And today is an episode for everybody out there who has ever considered what it might be like to really connect to their own healing gifts in a way that actually can transition them into a new career. My guest is Sushma Sagar, who I've known for several years now and whose journey I've been following closely during that time. Sushma, when I met her, was the marketing director for Kate Spade, fashion label many of you will know about, and we really connected over our sort of fashion background and how we also had a very deep kind of interest in the spiritual world and spiritual topics that had been kind of running alongside that for us for a long time. Sushma at the time had a sort of a side gig or a side practice giving people Reiki, but was seriously considering, how do I transition out of this corporate life into healing as my full-time gig? And I am so, like I said, happy to have been able to walk that path with her and really witness this incredible transformation. Sushma launched in 2017 her brand, The Calmery, which we'll hear a lot more about during this conversation. But listen up for tons of wisdom about how to walk that path. I know that lots of my listeners and numinous readers over the years have really been really curious about this. Like, how can I really follow something that feels more true to me, whether it's a healing path or whether it's something else that really feels like it's an expression of your creativity, your creative gifts, what you're here to bring to the world, when perhaps you're actually on a corporate path that's feeling less and less like it's really you. So, Sushma, thank you so much for joining me today to get deep into all of this, and I know give people some really valuable insights. Thank you for being here. Where are you joining me from today, Sushma?
Oh, it's a real pleasure to be here. Thank you for inviting me, Ruby. I'm joining you from Hackney in London, in the east part of London. It's a very sunny day, but it's also very cold. The weather's about to turn.
Cool. And I'm here in Brooklyn, New York. And we met in New York, actually drinking rosé on the roof of Soho House. It was such a Sex in the City moment.
It really was. Great afternoon.
And it's funny. I mean, it feels like almost another lifetime for both of us. And I think it was certainly a turning point for me. I was working on my first book, and it was a turning point for you in terms of really thinking about how can I make this shift. Mm-hmm. And it's funny, we went from rosé on the rooftop at Soho House to a couple of days later, you joined me at a red tent ceremony at a small healing center in Brooklyn where we made peace with our periods. And I thought in that moment, wow, yeah, this is, Sushma has a similar path to me, probably. I think who could not bond over a situation like that? What are your kind of memories of that ceremony?
Oh my God. Do you know, that was one of the most, it was the most powerful, and it made the most sense to me, even though it was kind of out there. And at the time when people weren't talking about periods in the way that they are now, it did feel like really sort of quite out there in only a kind of New York sort of way. But then, some of the wisdom that came from that day made so much sense to me. It was so logical. It almost felt crazy that we hadn't been taught this, to think about our monthly cycle in the form of natural seasons. One is spring, one is summer, one is autumn. And then when you bleed, it's winter. And how to operate in those, within those seasons, and to not plan your month as just a flat month, to understand that there are different highs and different lows, and if you want to be your best, to work with them. It was just so groundbreaking and also so reasonable and logical. I just couldn't believe it. It was actually very, very similar to my life, in that in one sense it was very logical and rational, but in the other sense it was always very mystical and spiritual, but it all seemed to make perfect sense when combined. And of course, the women there, we all bonded, didn't we, very deeply.
We really did.
Day. Yes.
Because it was a beautiful whole day ceremony hosted by a wonderful woman called Ali Darby. And I wrote about it in my first book. For anyone who's unfamiliar with a red tent ceremony, this is actually, it's a subject for a whole other episode, mm-hmm. but it's really a ceremony that acknowledges how in Western modern society, we don't actually ever honor a woman's transition from girlhood to womanhood when she begins her periods. In fact, we do the opposite. We hide from it. We make it somehow shameful. It's often thought of as dirty, or it's just something that's not spoken about openly, let alone celebrated. And that's a huge missing piece in a woman's development, actually, spiritually, emotionally, physically. And so, yeah, I feel like, like I said, how could we not have emerged from that experience feeling like sisters on this really deep level? And I'm curious, so at the time, it seemed to me like you really were, you'd been in your corporate career and following this corporate path and become very successful. But you had, like I said, been juggling this with doing more and more of your healing work on the side. Can you kind of just give me a snapshot of how you were feeling at that time, where you, how these two these two Sushmas had sort of been operating side by side, and how, what sort of a tension was building up around that for you?
Well, I think tension definitely is a really good word. And they were working side by side, but very much in isolation from each other. So, you know, nobody in my, I'd never told anybody at all in my career, in the various jobs I'd had in my teams, that this is what I did on the side. It was absolutely my little private secret. And of course, friends and family knew this is what I did, but it was something that I actually felt not ashamed of, but I thought that it would mean that I wasn't serious about my real life. I say real life in inverted commas, because I always thought that the corporate job was the real world and this was my private world. I felt that I could only be one or the other. And I also didn't want, you know, it's quite cutthroat in that there's always someone who will do the job for less, who'll work harder. And there is always that pressure to be as good as your last project, or to make sure they were glad they hired you because your job is so coveted. And so I didn't want anything to ever indicate that I wasn't less than 100% committed to the job day and night. I'm also working for American companies as well. You know, you're working hours outside of your normal hours because you're dealing with, you know, New York or LA or San Francisco. So you're kind of on call all the time, and you just don't want anyone to think that you're not available for the job. And so that's why I didn't tell anyone. I just didn't feel like it was a safe thing to do. But when I came to New York that particular year, meeting you, meeting a bunch of other fantastic girls, I remember when we had that picnic. And I just thought, look at these women. They're fabulous. They're successful. They're embracing their spirituality. They're not hiding their gifts as healers, as readers, as, you know, various other things that they were doing, crystal healing and all the different things that people were doing, EFT. And it was a real turning point for me, because I was shown an example of how you can have both. And it was literally that same trip that I came out of what I was calling the spiritual closet. And I even wrote a piece of the Numinous about it, because it was so profound for me, because I went into work, the New York office the next day. And when they asked me what I'd been doing the night before, I didn't lie. I came out with it and I said I'd been doing healing, and just sort of came clean about what I did in my private life and sort of brushed it off like it wasn't a big deal. But that was a big deal, because I'd literally come clean about my other life for the first time in, 15 years.
And how did that moment feel? You said you came out with it as if it was no big deal, but how were you feeling inside about that?
Terrified. But also, it also felt like I had to, in a way, because it really was down to seeing, these amazing, I think in New York people are a lot further ahead, or they were at the time, in terms of spirituality and being, one of the things that we are now embracing in the UK, we weren't embracing to that degree. When was this? Was it 5 years, maybe 6 years ago?
I think it was probably about 5 years ago. Yeah. It was probably late summer, autumn of 2014.
Yes. So it was really seeing that example of how you can be both. You can have both of these things in your life. It doesn't mean you're one or the other. And that was what gave me the strength, in a way, to go in and sort of be my authentic self, you know, I didn't dwell on it. I went in, I said it, and I carried on with my spreadsheets afterwards. But it was a real turning point. And I think that actually, if I traced it back, was the beginning of the whole new path, because it was me being my authentic self. It was me taking a step into the integrity of what it means to be a healer and to not only have the gifts, but to be honoring them and stepping into the shoes of them. And, you know, it's all very well having your master's certificate, which anyone can take. And I've had mine since 2008, but it wasn't until...
You mean your Reiki master's?
Yeah, healer, master healer training. I did it, you know, a very long time ago. But I don't think I really started stepping into the shoes of what that meant until that day when I started to come clean and be open about who I was and being authentic about myself to the world.
So what was the response when you came out with it?
Well, it was actually a very lovely response. My boss was really intrigued and she said, oh my gosh, that's amazing. I think she said that was amazing. And I had no idea that you did that. And I kind of went, didn't you? Oh, I'm sure I mentioned it. Oh, but obviously I knew I hadn't. But she was quite intrigued and quite curious. And I think she thought it made me more interesting. There was more to me than she had known. And that also gave me confidence as well, that the response hadn't been negative.
I wonder how much of that, excuse me. I wonder how much of that is due to the fact that it is, Kate Spade is a female founded, largely female run company. And if the response might have been slightly different had you been working in a much more masculine environment.
Oh, I'm sure, definitely. And I think, aside from the fact my boss at the time, she's, you know, one of the best I've ever had. She's really open, lovely lady. You know, it couldn't have probably been with any other bosses that I was so open about myself. And yes, it is. I think it's possibly 80% female. And they really do celebrate women in all of their guises, and they celebrate all of the quirks and the individuality that make you a woman, and it's actually in their brand. So luckily they walk the talk, you know, it's internal and external. Yeah, sure, you have to work incredibly hard to be there, but they do celebrate your quirks and your individuality as part of their brand manifesto.
So it was right place at the right time, I suppose.
Yes,
moment.
Exactly.
All the factors kind of combined into you feeling safe to make that leap in that moment. And like you said, step into, I love the way you described that idea of having, it's one thing to kind of discover or connect to your healing gifts, but what's the responsibility that comes with that? It's an entirely different to use that solely for yourself, use that maybe for close family and friends, and actually then think about how can I use this in the wider world. And that's a big leap, I think. And perhaps the responsibility of that leap is something that maybe subconsciously holds people back in these situations also.
Yeah, and I think everybody's journey will be different and the timing around that will be different. I think I was I needed time to go through the levels of my own healing. I don't think I could have done it any earlier. Because I simply hadn't done the work on myself. I hadn't been through the several layers of healing. I mean, healing's a lifelong journey, but there's no way that I could have got to that point without doing all of those years of work beforehand. So in a way, everything was leading up to that wonderful sort of serendipitous moment of being in the right place at the right time, having met you, seeing the girls, having had that experience and thinking, I need to do this too. And in a way, spirit was, I say spirit as in sort of the greater force that guides us, was leading me to that point and saying, come on. And in a way, pushing me to take that step, because I think I was ready to share my gifts with the world, but I hadn't. I hadn't sort of got the memo, or maybe I had the memo, but I was ignoring it. And, you know, all of those sorts of feelings around it, there's a lot of fear-based
Absolutely. Feelings,
and also identity as well. And this is, you know, we were talking about this last week, weren't we?
Mm.
My identity was so wrapped up in my job. I did not identify at all with being a healer.
Mm.
Quite frankly, I didn't want to. I didn't like the brand healing, if you know what I mean. I just didn't like it. I didn't identify it. I didn't really want to be seen as one. I certainly didn't want to call myself one. I found the whole thing a bit naff and cheesy, and it alienated me, to be honest. And I identified much more with the other world I was in. So there was a real kind of identity issue. I was way too wrapped up in my job.
Mm.
It wasn't real,
mm.
but it's what I thought I was.
Mm.
And that's really, so there was a lot.
That's really interesting, because you shared when you began talking about this, your fear of not being taken seriously if
yes.
you came out as a healer, that people might then perceive you in a different way. And actually what mm-hmm. what you're sharing now is showing her that was actually if you were worried about your being perceiving yourself in a different way as well.
Completely.
And actually you were perhaps projecting that fear or that your own distaste for this kind of idea of like what it means to be a professional healer and the kind of like ideas you have about what that sort of a person is or had.
Oh yeah.
Being actually,
totally
you were projecting
judging myself
fears onto everyone you worked with, you know.
Oh my God, in the same way that, you know, many years ago I'd look at someone and judge them on their shoes. Luckily I managed to sort of rub those harsh corners off, those very shallow, superficial corners that I started off in the industry with. But I would apply them to myself as well.
Mm.
You know, I would harshly judge myself based on those same sorts of thought processes.
Mm. Well, it's cultural conditioning, isn't it? About, you know, the stuff we internalize as young women about what it means to be a cool, sexy, attractive woman, which are all the things we're told are the most important thing to be as a woman, of course, you know. And I think it's interesting. It's making me think that actually, I went through a very similar process, and it's part of the reason I set up the Numinous, because I was so fascinated with all these subjects. Yet my conditioning around those things, around appearances, etc., meant that I had to create my own platform where I could present these subjects in a way that was appealing aesthetically to me. And I think, you know, as the years have passed, the aesthetics have become way less important than the content. And I think that's something you've experienced too. And that when you talked about the healing that you had to do on yourself before you could step fully into the path, that's a part of the healing, right? That undoing that conditioning around what it means to be a successful, attractive, appealing woman in the world, you know? That's part of it.
Absolutely, you know, and fashion, I think, is a particularly potent in this area. You know, people get very, very sucked in to it, to the glamour, to a lot of things that aren't actually real. And I was very, very guilty of identifying very strongly with all of that. So this idea of who am I, was one I've really had to kind of unpick and really get down and dirty with.
Mm.
And there's a lot of self-acceptance of the different facets that make me me.
Mm.
And, you know, I think the Numinous is a really great platform because it says, yes, you can be fashionable and still like mystical things. You don't need to give up one for the other. You know, you can be a woman and, you know, go-getter and out there, and you can also be in there and introvert and meditative and be in yourself as well. You can be all of those things and it's okay. But I think I had to learn that. You know, and I'm still learning it, but I had to learn it, especially those years after I came out at work.
I love it. You came out, exactly. And I think it's something that we're all collectively unlearning together, to look to see beyond appearances. And that goes across, that can be applied to so many different areas of life, you know.
Mm.
The question of identity, what makes us who we are, is at the heart of like so much of the political strife that we're seeing, and so much of the kind of, you know, just so much we're seeing in the world generally. And I think that this is a part of that whole collective healing piece that we're doing together. Could you also explain a little bit about the sort of family conditioning that you had to overcome around what was the correct or kind of acceptable career path for you? Because you wrote another piece for the Numinous about 2017 being the year that you unbrainwashed yourself. And there was quite a lot of family and cultural sort of conditioning that you were also confronted with when you chose to leave this quote unquote successful career behind to pursue something that might be seen as more or less kind of respectable.
Yes. So I'm Indian, for those of you who aren't familiar with me. So Indians, we like certificates, we like education, you know, we like status in that it's cultural, you know. Our families will educate their children to as much as they can. It's a really, it's a very, very big thing. And to be able to say, oh, my daughter has an MBA, or my son does this, it's part of the culture to be very proud of your children's achievements and to be able to share them with your clan or your tribe. And, you know, and family's a massive thing as well for us, and, you know, making your family proud. I'm sure it's not just like only Indian people, but it is a big thing for Indian families. So there was all of that, not wanting to let them down, wanting them to still be proud, wanting them to just sort of, yeah, feel proud, I think is it really. And to be proud of, you know, when they talk about you, to feel proud as well. Which isn't your problem per se, but it was something that was on my mind. And this idea of being successful is very much tied into achievements. Certainly. But I think the idea of success now is much broader, and I certainly feel that it encompasses a lot of different things, but there's still a big part of me that is, I guess, a high achiever, because I've been brought up that way, and that's how I value my self-worth. And I know that's probably not that healthy, but there is a part of me that's how I was made.
It's very normal. It may not be healthy, no, but it's how our society operates, you know. For some cultures it's more apparent and spoken about more, but for all of us, the idea of this kind of hierarchical model of success, like the higher you climb and the more you achieve, the better a person you are, the more value you have in the world. And I think that again is something that we're all collectively questioning.
So this idea of leaving what was actually possibly one of the best jobs in fashion at the time. It was probably my dream job, I would say, the one that I had dreamt of for my entire career. It was like that thing when you get to the top rung of the ladder and you're like, oh my God, I'm here working for this incredible brand. I adore it. I adore all the products. I love my job. I get to travel. I'm around all these incredible women. I mean, this is it. This is it. I'm made. This is it. And then you're like, oh, now what? Kind of thing. And what do I do? Do I go to try and be VP of marketing? Do I try and get higher, senior director, this, that? You know, where does it stop? Where does it end? More pressure, more time, you know, more stress. And it really made me question, I'm already under a lot of pressure. I'm already quite stressed. I have very little spare time. If I want to go higher up, there's going to be more of that. Is that what I want? Is that the life I want? And so there's a lot of questions around that. And then, you know, back to the family point that you asked me about. It really was, you know, when you've almost brainwashed yourself to think that you want the things that your family would be proud of, to then think, but actually, what do I think? And is what I'm thinking what I think? Or is it the inherited beliefs of my culture? I have no idea anymore. And I then had to go on a bit of a journey to try and work out what was mine and what wasn't. And it was really interesting because I had to think, you know, if I took away all of those people, all of those judgments, all of those things, and it didn't, none of it mattered anymore, genuinely, what would I think? And that was so difficult to kind of peel it all away and go, what do I think? Do I actually believe in marriage? Do I? Do I actually believe in all of these things that I would just adopted? And, you know, I'm sure my opinion actually does change, but at the time I really had to think about all of those things, because changing my job was actually just one element. It was almost like by taking that card off, all the other cards started to topple down, and it started a massive chain reaction of me looking at every aspect of who I was, not just the job. And then what the parents and the culture and all of those things came into it. It's just one big, like, oh, wow, what am I? Who am I? What do I think? And there was a real period of fog and confusion whilst I was going through that.
And it's interesting because we've been in contact fairly regularly throughout this period ever since we met. And I never got the impression, and perhaps you did go into a sort of dark night of the soul and I wasn't in contact with you during that time, but I never really got the impression that you were struggling with this. And I wonder what that journey actually looked for you, what kind of support you got for yourself along the way, whether you did take a big time out from the world and from everything and just kind of go into your cave of personal discovery. What did that process look like for you?
Well, you know, I'm quite private, so I don't tend to share when I'm having dark times because I just am a private person. And the way that, you know, they were never dark in the way of like how when I say dark, it was never like dark where I was feeling very dark. It was just more a real kind of identity crisis, I would say, would be a more accurate description. And then the healing work, I just go into like massive bouts of self-healing when I'm facing difficulties. And I worked with some various healers in the UK, and it actually, shamanism was one of the things that was helping me to work through all of this, like working with spirit in a much more deeper way, and working through all the different facets of the things that were coming up. And that led me onto the path of shamanic practice. That was one of the things that did. But yes, I think I would just, we would probably have the odd conversation here and there, but I, you know, I'm not one for doing massive blog posts or any of that. I just kind of go away and try and work it out. And then I'll emerge later, and then perhaps later I may share what I learned, but I tend not to do it at the time.
It's interesting because I think we hear so much about, you know, don't do this alone, make sure you get ample support, don't try and do it alone, as if there's a danger in that. But actually for some of us, and I think I'm very similar actually, when I'm in those phases of real kind of like inner transformation, which is essentially what's happening, I also retreat, and it's part of my own introverted kind of more private person. And then, as you said, you know, when I've come out the other side is when I feel like ready to share about it, I suppose. So it is, yeah, it is possible to do this in a very kind of internal inner way. But then you did also mention that you had specific healers that you were working with. And I do always think that's really important to get that kind of support you're in those situations.
Absolutely. You know, I don't do it alone. I do call on the support of the various healers that I trust. But it is, it's not like, these are not things that my family could really help me with. Or to be honest, you know, I didn't even really turn to that many friends because it was such a personal, you know, if I said to a friend, oh, you know, I feel insecure about what I've done or who I am, they're like, oh, don't be stupid, everyone still loves you. And then it's, yeah, but that's nice to hear, but it's not getting to the root of the issue which I need to heal. The only real way, the only way that I know to get to the root of things is shamanic work.
Right.
So that's why I turn to that.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that about friendships, and in a way that's more of what I went, because our default, and again it's cultural conditioning, but our default when we see a friend quote unquote going through a difficult time is to attempt to make them feel better in the moment, rather than actually, and this is something I discussed in the episode I recorded with Alexandra Roxo, because it's something we've been practicing with each other and also in Moon Club over the years, rather than just simply hold the space and actually truly listen to what the person is sharing with you and allow that to be messy and unhealed and in process in the moment, rather than kind of leaping in with the feel better salve. Mm. It's okay. You got this. We love you. Yes, it's great to hear those things, but it's not actually a part of the process, really.
Yeah. And of course, so I think that's why the healing was very much done with me and with the best healers I can find, which is spirit and the practitioners that I work with.
So I want to backtrack a little bit and actually speak to you about how you discovered or tapped into your own healing gifts and how you acted on that initial discovery. When was the first time you realized that you had the gift to heal yourself and to heal others?
I don't think I even really knew it. I first stumbled on the sort of this world in 2001 by accident on a trip in Mexico, and just in a crazy adventure ended up going to study with a shaman for a couple of weeks with my boyfriend at the time, and not really going into it thinking I want to study with a shaman, but it was just something that just happened. And then the following year, when I was going through the breakup with said boyfriend, I was given the number of acupuncturists who turned out to be a Reiki healer. And so she gave me a few sessions and I was really responding so well to what she was doing that she invited me to train with her. And I didn't know what it was I was training in or going, but I was kind of at a bit of a loss, really. I was sort of upset and didn't really know what I was doing from day to day. So I went and I learned how to do Reiki over those 3 days. And to be honest, I don't think you have to have a gift necessarily to do it, because I teach everybody and people can do it. I think maybe you just have to want to learn more and want to tune into that sensitivity and want to practice. And maybe I had a natural aptitude for it that I then exercised. Because I've always been quite sensitive, quite reserved, feel things, knew that there was more but didn't know what, but nothing that I ever really dwelt on. And it wasn't like I was a kid and I had the gift and I knew and anyone noticed it in me. It wasn't anything like that. I was just a normal person.
or maybe I love that. I was just a human.
Yeah, but it wasn't like something happened or just wasn't like that. I think spirit may have noticed and spirit put it all in my path, if you know what I mean.
Well, interesting. I was thinking it seems like maybe it found you at again exactly the right time. You were going through something in your life, this breakup, where you were perhaps needing this kind of healing more, and so therefore more receptive to it than you might have been at another period in your life. And so that kind of like started a chain reaction. You had a really positive response to it. You were like, this actually works. I have some kind of empirical evidence here that this works. So I'm intrigued more. So I'm going to take this woman up on her offer to learn. She says I'm good at it. So then you're inspired to keep practicing, like you say. And it's like that kind of daisy chain of events and circumstances that led to it, rather than, because I was thinking about this and I sort of did my Reiki 1 certificate a few years ago and really didn't feel it. I didn't believe that it worked for me. I still don't believe that I have the Reiki gift, but I wonder if it's because I was going into it for the reasons of, this would be a fun article to write. I wasn't going to it because I needed the healing. And so therefore that I was somehow close to it, or maybe in some way it didn't really sink in. And I intend at some point, if and when the time arises, to revisit it. Yeah. But I wonder if that timing thing was actually a key piece.
Yes, I think timing really helps. And also it depends on so many things. Like it depends, let's say that you're in a really big group and you haven't really had a chance to have your experience properly, or maybe you felt too shy to ask questions, so that you didn't really buy into what was happening. Or there could be a number of external things that may have interrupted with your experience that day.
I actually wonder as well, and you're actually one of the only Reiki practitioners where I've really experienced a kind of palpable physical benefit or shift after a session. And for that reason, I'm actually really drawn to learn with you, because again, I think there's that kind of that believability piece, which is like, oh, I actually know this works. And again, I came to you for Reiki. I don't know if you remember the first time, it was when I was doing the Selfridges shop project.
Oh,
I was in London to launch.
Yes.
I was hired by Selfridges department store in the UK to create this Christmas, a mystically themed Christmas shop in their shop.
Yeah.
And I was extremely nervous and stressed about this. Things just hadn't been going right with it. Communications were really bad. The products I was creating for it had come out terribly. I didn't want it to really be in the public eye, and I was very nervous about it. And I couldn't shake my anxiety about it. And so I came to you, and the immediate relief that I experienced after our session was to me just like exactly what I needed. And I really could understand this is how Reiki works. But again, I think I came to you at a time when I really needed it. Mm-hmm. And so I was very open and receptive to receiving it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, yeah, you get, like I said before, I've had sessions because they've been offered to me as a freebie, come and check out what I'm doing or whatever it is. So I do think there's something about the level of commitment off of the person entering into the practice.
Yes. And I think, you know, like I said, this was 2002.
Yeah.
When I first started learning. And it made me feel good. So I carried on doing it just quietly.
Mm.
And, you know, it's, what is it, 2017 when I moved to Calgary? That's what, 15 years,
yeah.
15 years later.
Mm.
So it wasn't an immediate, oh, I need to drop everything and share this amazing gift with the world. It's taken a lot of time to get my head around it, to get to grips with what it is, to believe it, to trust it. And it had nothing to do necessarily with having the certificate. It was life experiences and my own journey and, you know, just the idea of distant healing.
Mm.
It foxed me for a decade. I could not get my head around how it was working to the point where I couldn't even do it because my mind was just getting in the way. I just couldn't get my head around it. And then one day I suddenly got it, or maybe it was gradual, but it took a decade for my mind to accept what it couldn't explain.
Right.
And that was, again, it's conditioning, but you have to, you know, it's layers and layers of trust that have to be developed. You know, someone else may get there a lot more quickly than I did.
Mm.
And perhaps now with the speed at which people are growing and developing and evolving, maybe that would happen a lot more quickly back in 2002. Things weren't as quick as they are now. So it took me ages.
But I really like what you're sharing, which is a message about allowing things to take their time and not expecting to get stuff overnight or to be able to practice something overnight. And I think we do live in a culture that kind of enables that or leads us to believe that's the way things need to be done. And actually, we're losing touch with the idea that it takes time and experience to build a practice to a level where you're actually competent to be practicing in the world, you know? So I think that's actually a really valuable thing to reflect on.
Yeah, I had to trust and get to that point of trust, and even just trusting what you're feeling when I'm teaching.
Mm.
And people are like, I think I felt it, I'm not sure. I'm like, well, if you think you did, then you probably did.
Mm.
Oh, but I don't know if I did. Well, then why did you think you did? You see what I mean?
I mean, it's tricky. So what we're talking about is the numinous, right? That it's the undefinable aspects of our experience that we don't have language for. We haven't been taught to pay attention to or to believe or to trust necessarily. So we're having to relearn that language,
yes,
aren't we?
Mm. It is. And it's not the one that we're educated in.
Mm.
It's a whole new language.
Mm. Well, it's maybe an ancient language that we're having
remember. Yeah, 100% accurate, Ruby. Yeah. Completely. It's a language that we already have in us, but we've never spoken outwardly. And it's learning how to speak that language again. And it's like learning a language, you know.
Mm.
You have to practice it to get fluent.
So I want to get back into this little, back into the timeline of your story. What was the tipping point? When did you decide, this is it, I'm going to make the leap and leave the job and go full time on the healing path?
There were so many big moments. You know, the one we just talked about in New York, coming clean, being authentic was the first one. And then I think after that, things started flooding in. More people started coming for healing. I started getting offered opportunities to do healing in different places. So I'd be like scrabbling for holiday time so I could go and do those things. And one of them, which was a really big one, was Obanjan Festival in Croatia.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd already been there the year before, and I'd been doing healings in this very, very powerful, magical pine forest, and having some pretty mystical experiences, you know, the kinds of things that you would imagine that you'd taken some kind of psychedelic drugs to have. But actually it was just this, because I was healing every single day, I was doing 3 to 4 healings, and I'd got into this real zone I've never been in before. So I'd never done that much healing in an intense period of time. And the kinds of information that was coming through me and the things that I was seeing the tree auras. I mean, it was getting really trippy on this island. And
did
I was
tree auras.
Yes.
Amazing. Yes.
I know. And, you know, things I'd never experienced before. And it was blowing my mind. And when you've had an experience like that, to then go back into the box of corporate world felt really weird. And then I started to question what is real, what isn't, what's life, what isn't. And I think it was definitely Obanjan. That island is an incredibly magical island.
Mm.
And something else shifted. And I started to become, there was like a quiet unrest then that started brewing. And suddenly going back to the corporate office suddenly felt, it just didn't feel good in the same way that it used to. But it didn't feel bad, but something was, the horse had bolted, let's say, at that point. Yeah. And it was like, oh, I feel a bit strange, but not enough to do anything. But then it just started building. And by the following year, when I went back to Obanjan, I was absolutely resolute that I had to do something. And then the timing was perfect because the company was going through a major shift. A merger was being taken over. A lot of the senior people were leaving. It was one of those real moments in time where it was almost like a message from the stars. If you're going to do this, now's the time. It's a massive change for the company. This could be the massive change for you as well.
Yeah.
And so I think it was definitely Obanjan that planted that seed. No, maybe the seed was planted back in New York, but then it started to grow and germinate in Obanjan.
It's like it was planted in New York, it started to germinate the first year at Obanjan, and then the second year it came up and it was like,
through the soil.
no more ignoring this.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And again, it took time, you know. And then I started, you know, planning, but also thinking, God, am I crazy? Am I actually going insane? I want to leave this, what was my dream position, but is it?
And the quote unquote perks that come with that.
Yeah. Oh yes. You know, all the handbags, my God, I miss the handbags.
You know? I love that you went to handbags before you went to like salary, status, travel.
But it was every season I'd get an allowance of just new products that I'd become quite complacent about, which is an alarm bell. When you become complacent about what is actually an incredible gift, that's something that you really need to look at yourself. You know, when you become complacent about trips to New York, I think I actually complained about one of them. Oh, I have to go to New York.
Yeah.
What a pain.
Yeah.
You know, this is an incredible opportunity. And yet you've actually got to the point where you're so complacent that you're actually complaining about it.
Yeah.
And I just started to clock these thoughts in my head and noticing them and having awareness of, of those what I consider unhealthy thoughts, and thinking, do I like who I'm becoming? Quite ungrateful for what I have.
Again, is this really who I am?
Yes, you know? Exactly.
Yeah.
And just being quite honest about what is a quite unpalatable parts of my personality. You know, that's not the nicest part of me, to be a bit of a spoiled madam. but I felt that I could see those things coming through, and they were at odds with this other part of myself. But actually having the awareness, which I don't think I'd had before, was to see those facets of myself and go, ooh, do I like this spoiled madam that is really complacent about the amazing gifts that she has in her life? And what is this telling me? Maybe I need to shake things up. And it has been very humbling to do without all of those perks, you know, when the free perks aren't there, when the travel's not there, when you aren't being upgraded, when you know, a lot of invites for things became less because I'm not sponsoring anyone. I don't have a budget.
Yeah.
So.
Well, exactly. And not forgetting. Things, yeah. Not forgetting when the salary isn't there. I mean, that's a huge piece.
Which
is huge piece that puts most people, it's probably the first thing that comes up to put most people off making this kind of a leap. What do I do without that regular paycheck? And then, you know, we can zoom out on that and go, well, yeah, the capitalist system loves to give us a regular paycheck. So we stay nicely, towing the line, playing our role as a cog in the wheel versus kind of pursuing something that's more true to us and more useful and valuable in the world overall.
Well, on that note, Ruby, and this is also for anyone who is planning on taking this step, I did not suddenly decide to leap and then do it. I planned it. And the minute I came back from the festival, I started saving. Mm. I started saving like crazy. I started putting away as much of my salary as was humanly possible in preparation for a leap I knew that I would have to make at some point in the future, but I didn't know exactly when. So I sort of tried to mitigate as much of that financial risk as I possibly could whilst I had the salary. And when, what that did mean is that when I did leave my job, I'd given myself a small buffer where I wasn't freaking out. And I could just come to terms with the big step I'd made.
Yeah.
Without worrying about how I was paying my bills.
That's such important advice. Yeah.
Yes. So none of this was done on a whim. And I think anyone who says, oh yeah, one day I just decided to leave my job and embrace my gifts. I don't think it worked. For me, it didn't work like that. I'm much more cautious. I'm way too responsible to take a big risk like that. So I really did do as much as I could to keep myself afloat. And sure, I've had to cope with a massive lifestyle change, but I also have got, and this is where we go back to the word of success. I have a freedom that I've never experienced before. And I have a life that's way more on my own terms than I've ever known before. And it's the compromise between having those extra three figures is now I have a sense of freedom. My spirit feels a lot more free. And I don't see why I can't make that money up in the future. And I remember saying to you, the day that I reach the same salary that I was on at Kate is the day that I'll know I've made it in my own head. That's my benchmark, because I'll have that as a sort of a line in the sand of what I've achieved. But yeah, I think it's all of those things combined. When you decide to change a very, very long career, you have to go through a sort of a metamorphosis in many, many different ways. And when you make one change, you will find yourself questioning everything else in your life as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. I want to jump back to Open Yan a bit. We were there together summer. It was the summer of 2017, and my first book had just come out, for those who were unfamiliar, Open Yam was a sort of whole summer long music and wellness festival that happened on a private island in Croatia. And it was just such a perfect, beautiful, almost bubble that burst, sadly, after that first beautiful summer. They were unable to continue for multiple reasons. But we were lucky enough to be there at the same time as a very special person, Sharman Direk. I'm sure you knew I was going to bring Direk into this conversation at some point, but you received, for anyone unfamiliar with Sharman Direk, check out his podcast, Ancient Wisdom Today. He's an incredible healer who is just such a major force and presence in the world. He was there and he gave you, I guess, a kind of spontaneous Reiki upgrade. He reprogrammed you, gave you an extra jolt of Reiki power. And I was the first person to experience that. And it was almost like there were bolts of electricity coming out of your hands after it was incredibly powerful, wasn't it? We both felt it. It was like there was a charge. How much do you think that experience with Durek actually kind of supercharged you on your mission in a way?
Oh my God. I mean, I'm like his biggest fan. Like, he has a lot of fans, but I just think he's incredible. You know, he really is the real deal. And he's so generous with his gifts. He's very, very generous. And he really doesn't mind who and how and what. He doesn't keep anything secret. I was actually a little bit intimidated when I first saw him, because he has such a presence, and you know that he's very big in LA and all of these things. So there's a bit like, oh, he's a bit of a shaman superstar. But then on meeting him, he's so sweet and humble and almost childlike and playful in a lot of ways. And I think I had summoned up the courage to ask him a question. I had some question, I don't recall what the question was. And he was at the cafe in the Zen Den area. And I think it was to do with me going about being a healer. And like, it was something, or asking for some sort of advice on that road. And I got the advice, and then he said, let me just have a little word. And he had a word with his guides. And he said, and then he literally, without really asking, can I do this? He just started doing this mad energetic upgrade. It was like he had a control panel and he was giving instructions to these, it must be his team of guides and helpers. It's like he had an earpiece and he was sending instructions, you know, do this on mode this. He was using kind of almost terminology that I'd never heard of before, giving instructions for them to do some kind of not surgery, but some kind of things on me. I don't know what was going on. And I was getting, and then he was said, oh, do an electric charge or what was it?
Wasn't it something about turn her power up higher?
That was it. It was a bit like,
no, go higher.
It was like when you try to revive someone's heart and it was like, you give them a thump with those pads. It was like that. And then he was like, okay, higher, dial it up. Stronger, higher, up to 7, up to 8, up to 9. And I could see this dial in my head going up, up, up. And I was getting these electric charges. I didn't know what was going on. And all these people in this cafe were looking at me, watching this thing happen. And it was the most surreal and incredibly charged, powerful experience. I was speechless. And he said, you know, you just need to... You see that voice in your head? You say, you know, that voice, you think it's yours. It's not. Those are your guys, but they talk to you in your own voice so that you don't get freaked out. And that was the last thing he said. And I was like, wow. And I came straight back. We were sharing a little hut villa thing. And I was like, looked at you. I was like, Ruby, something just happened. And it was so palpable. Like you say, my hands were on fire and I could feel my whole body just sort of vibrating in a way that, like, I've been plugged into some kind of source, a new source. And it was insane. It was, again, something I hadn't experienced. And just knowing that I had all of that power inside me was it just made me feel so majestic and so like I was a really powerful person and I could do all these things that I was dreaming of. And then to learn to use that extra energy in my hands was again the next chapter. And to be given a massive sword, then you have to learn how to use it. So then I spent quite a lot of time practicing working with this new charge of energy that I had. But yes, if you haven't checked out Shaman Jurek, everybody check him out, because
definitely,
he is a force of nature.
A force 100%. Of nature.
Yes.
And it's making me think of something else actually that came up that trip in conversation with him, which I think is a really important piece to touch on in terms of anyone thinking about becoming a professional healer, studying different traditions. The question of not even cultural appropriation, but spiritual appropriation had kind of been circling for me at that point. Some people on social media and elsewhere have been commenting, not all of these traditions are for everybody. And we need to remember, we need to be remembering and honoring of the lineages where they came from. And it was something I was very aware of and knew was also a really important piece, as so many of these indigenous and ancient practices have brought into a much more mainstream usage. I remember asking Jurek about it, who's a third generation shaman from Ghana in Africa. And his response was, what? These don't belong to anybody. These practices, these tools belong to spirit. And if you ask spirit, spirit wants everybody to have access and for these to be available to everybody. And the more people, he was kind of miming, like taking things out of a trunk or a suitcase. You know, here, take it, take this. You need this, take it, just take it. And he sees his mission is to really bring these tools to as many people as possible. However, I also appreciate the other side of the other piece of the picture, particularly living here in the US, just really thinking deeply about the genocide that happened to Native Americans and the way that so many traditions have been taken and just used and spread willingly without any reparations being made, without any acknowledgement of where they've come from. It is a really important piece of, again, our collective healing that I think we all have a responsibility to address. And we've touched on this briefly, and last summer you went and did an in-depth month-long shamanic training in Europe, and I think it was something that came up there. I'd just love to hear your thoughts on that and kind of like how we can use these practices, bring them into a world that is so desperately, sorely, sorely in need of these healing arts in a way that is still respectful of the ancient traditions, lineage. And yeah, just kind of what your thoughts have been around that and how you practice responsibly in that sense, I suppose.
Well, interestingly, I had a real bee in my bonnet about that before I went on my training. And I was really quite, it just felt super, in my mind, a shaman was, again, me thinking about the outfit, the guy in the robes and he's been in the jungle and he comes from generations. And in my mind, it was like, that's the only person that could be a shaman. It's that person. But when I went on the training and the school I went to is called the Four Winds School, and it's run by a gentleman called Alberto Villoldo. And he was mentored by elders from the Caro tradition. And the Caro are a Peruvian tribe that lived in the mountains. And they actually were present for quite a lot of the training that when I was there, and they participated and gave us some of the shamanic rites. And when I asked them, or the ones that were able to be translated, about how they felt about us Westerners coming to learn their skills and the medicine, the response was they are absolutely delighted, because they think the world's a little bit, it's in trouble, basically. They think the world is in big trouble, and they were told by spirit that they were allowed to share. Like, for generations, they hadn't shared any of this medicine, but they were told, I think, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, when Alberto was working with them, that they need to help the earth to heal because the earth is in trouble. And they're quite frankly delighted that we care enough to spend all this time and attention in learning their wisdom. and they want us to go back to our cities and to our towns and share the wisdom for the good of the people in the earth and for the good of the earth and for Pachamama.
Mm.
And they don't give a flying monkey's what we call ourselves, whether I call myself an energy medicine practitioner or a shaman or a shamanic practitioner or a medicine woman. It's irrelevant as far as they're concerned, as long as you're respecting the work and the wisdom and working to the lineage. You know, there's a lot of responsibility that's given to you. All of that stuff is it's all our baggage.
Mm.
They don't care.
Mm.
It's about the work and it's about the teachings, not the teacher or the name.
Mm.
And that was very much the answer that I was given. I was the one with the hang-ups, not them.
Interesting. I'm really happy you can share that. And I think you did say something interesting though, which is about, this is about honoring the work and using the tools, the practices, the teachings in a way that is an integrity.
Absolutely.
And focusing on that piece being the most important piece.
And that was very much the message that I took away. All the other stuff is irrelevant. It's about the work. It's about the wisdom. It's about honoring the earth, honoring your lineage, honoring spirit, working with respect, and all of those sorts of things that you learn when you do this kind of work. The name of what you say and how you present it is entirely up to you.
It's very interesting. It's very Age of Aquarius, which is, you know, all about this astrological era that we began to enter into in the halfway through the last century, which is very much more about a sharing of information and a breakdown of hierarchical structures and ideas about there being, you know, certain people who hold all the wisdom and then give it out as required. Yeah. This is about, no, the wisdom's for all of us. For all of us to share in and for all of us to benefit from.
Yes,
so that's the other kind of perspective, I suppose, isn't it? Yeah.
Absolutely. So I had to decide what did I feel comfortable with myself?
Mm.
And I settled on energy. No, what did I call it myself? Shamanic energy practitioner? Something like that?
Yeah.
I think that's what I called myself.
I think that's what you call yourself, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's on my website, but I felt like that felt appropriate and accurate.
Mm.
I still didn't feel fully comfortable with going around saying I was a shaman.
Mm.
For some reason that just didn't feel right either. Mm. Not that it mattered to anybody else, but for me that was just didn't sit that right with me. So
well, that comes back to integrity and actually really listening to that voice that says that's not quite right, you know, and trusting that and finding a solution that does feel right.
Yes.
So tell me to finish up, just tell us a little bit about the Karmarie. What you do now, what your big mission is with the healing brand that you've created. You've brought, because what I love as well is that you haven't left behind your kind of branding and marketing expertise. You've actually applied that to the world of healing now.
Yes, exactly. Because like I said, I didn't really like the look and feel of it for a long, long time. And, you know, coming from that world, all of those things were very important to me. So I thought I'd apply them to healing and come up with something that I liked to look at. Feel of that wouldn't alienate me. It's kind of aimed at me, really, if I'm honest. what the Karmarie is it's all about energy medicine. So not necessarily just Reiki, but working with energy as a form of medicine for healing. And I try to present it in a really down-to-earth way because, again, that's how I like to hear about these sorts of things, very down to earth, matter of fact, not too airy fairy. And I also, one of the big things for me is really empowering people to understand that you are your own healer and you kind of have all of this in you. When you come for a healing, that someone else is not healing you.
Mm.
You are healing you. They're just creating a situation where it can happen easily. And I want people to understand that they can learn to heal themselves. They can come and learn Reiki and then they can do their own healing. And it's not about being hooked on going to see a healer once a week or being hooked on me or another healer, for example, like we are on pills or external things. Mm. The message is that you are a healer. You can heal yourself. And you may like assistance every now and again, just like you may like assistants cleaning your house, but every single day you still give it a dust or a wipe, you know, and it's just like that. And I'm really trying to make this much more accessible, because it is.
Mm.
It's a really accessible and inclusive mode of well-being that can help you every single day of your life, not just when you're broken. And that for me is the biggest message. I can, you know, take it out of the cupboard and make it inclusive and accessible, and make it an everyday well-being tool.
Mm.
Like I say on my website, take it out of the weird and into the weekday. And that really is, you know, how to describe what I'm trying to do with the Calmry, is to normalize it, essentially.
Mm. Mm. As it was once so normal, you know?
Yeah,
and I think what
absolutely.
You just described is a beautiful way of honoring what you learned from your teachers, from your mentors. And you're doing exactly that, you know, bringing this forward to hopefully as many people as possible, so that we don't find ourselves struggling with chronic depression, chronic anxiety, chronic addiction problems. We don't actually ever get to that point because we're doing this daily maintenance on our emotional, spiritual,
yes.
nervous system.
Exactly. And you sort of, you get to that point when you dip into it for a while. Normally people find it just like I did when you are broken.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then when you get to back to zero and you start to think, oh, I don't want to be broken again. I just want to keep topping myself up so that I'm more resilient in life. And that's what this journey takes you on, at a point where you become more resilient, and life doesn't knock you in the same way that it used to, because you can handle it more easily,
mm-hmm.
because your energy flow is buoyant and strong. And you can heal things as they come up rather than letting them fester.
Mm.
And I think it's just completely changed my approach to life. And the people that I teach also, I see them going through these wonderful transformations. And that really is the thing for the Calmry, is by talking about energy in a very down-to-earth, normal way, it will attract a wider audience who are not necessarily interested in the mystical or the mandalas or the mantras or the Japanese iconography and all of that stuff, which is there for once you go down the road and you become much more into it. But that very first gateway step into this kind of work, I'm trying to make it much easier for people to take that step.
Sushma, thank you so much for sharing your story today. I know it's just going to be so inspiring. It's inspiring to me to have watched you walk this path, to continue to so bravely and so calmly. And I know it's going to be inspiring to all our listeners. Quickly tell us where people can find you.
They can find me on, obviously there's the website, it's thecalmry.com. There's the Instagram, which is @thecalmry. There's also a Facebook group. Again, it's thecalmry. It's thecalmry everywhere, really.
You really
easy.
Do know your branding thing, Kane, don't you?
And if anybody wants to drop me a line, is listening, wants to ask any questions, you don't want to do them publicly, then email me at sushma@thecalmry.com.
Perfect.
And I will come back to you.
Thank you.
It's been a real pleasure, Ruby. You've been there from the beginning, and I'm just so grateful to have you as a friend and a supporter. To be able to have these conversations with you. So thank you.
Feeling is 100% mutual. I can't wait for tons more. I love you, Sush. See you soon.
Thank you too.
Bye.
Thanks, Ruby. Bye.
I'm so happy to be able to share Sushma's story with you, not only because I find her to be so inspiring, the way that she has really kind of made this transition out of her corporate life into this new career as a healer with such integrity and depth of practice and depth of meaning, that really it's an inspiration for anybody who wants to follow her in those footsteps. But above all, something that I think about often, actually, with the way the world is going, is that I believe many, many more of the jobs of the future are going to be within the realm of the healing arts. Whether it's actually more of us stepping into our actual healing gifts and working as healers, whether it's more of us taking on the role of emotional caretakers, I do believe that as more and more jobs become automated and as more and more of us become disillusioned with the kind of corporate career path, these are going to be where a lot of our career and employment opportunities lie. It will likely mean very big changes in terms of pay structures, in terms of salaries, in terms of exchange for our time and energy and our gifts. And I'm really excited to see how this evolution happens and what an impact more and more of us kind of stepping into our healing gifts, our role as each other's caretakers, as it were, actually has on the overall health of our societies as well as ourselves. So it's a really big, important conversation and something I think that more and more of us are going to be getting involved with as the years roll by. That's all from me here at The Now Age this week. I'll be back with more very soon. Loving you as always. Goodbye. This podcast features original music and is edited by alloaudio.com. www.alloaudio.com